Hello and welcome. You are listening to Moodily Matters, the podcast that recognizes that your mood matters. Every episode, we talk to a range of amazing guests with experience in some of the top organizations in the world, discussing work life at the crossroads of mood, well-being, and performance. Together, we aim to create better workplaces, one mood at a time. Let's get started with your host, Moodily founder, Erica First.
Hello, everyone. I am Erica First, the host of Moodily Matters, and welcome to our second season. I want to thank everyone who participated in season one and who helped this podcast grow, and would like to let you know that according to Listen Notes, we're in the top 2.5% of global podcasts. So really, thank you so much to everyone who listened, liked, shared, posted, commented. And of course, thank you to all of my incredible guests for being so open, honest, and amazing to talk to and to listen to. That said, I am so excited to bring you season two. This season will have a theme, and the theme is skills. And I'll explain why. I spent 2 years studying the neuroscience and psychology of mental health, and then another year going for a master's in behavioral and organizational psychology. Now, during that time, I did an extensive amount of research on stress, stress management, and more specifically, stress management interventions in the workplace. I read hundreds of studies dating back to the 90s to today that examined how stress shows up in the workplace and tested what interventions were most successful in helping people not only to manage their stress, but also learn to strive as individuals. Now, I condensed all of this research into a review paper that I published in August of 2022 in the Open Journal of Business and Management. And what I uncovered in my research was really surprising, and that is the fundamental role of skill-based learning. And before I go any further, let me just take a step back and talk about what stress is and how it works. So our stress response is an evolutionarily inherited response, which is really designed to help us stay alive. Our stress response is a good thing. Now, you've probably heard on the internet or somewhere and other stress interventions talking about, you know, what happens when you encounter a saber-toothed tiger in the wild. And your brain goes into autopilot and it shuts off all unnecessary systems and heightens your attention, your focus, strength, and your aggression, and it gets you ready to fight. Or the other option is that all of those bodily systems get supercharged to prepare you to run. And then the final option is that your systems shut down, but you end up freezing. Now, what happens to our body physiologically in this moment is incredible. And there's a cocktail of hormones and neurotransmitters that get activated. Some of these responses, like a surge of cortisol and epinephrine, are meant to be in circulation for a short amount of time. Any excess of these hormones can, over a long period of time, can cause severe damage to the body. And we don't have two stress systems, like one for life-threatening events and another one for things that ultimately are not that important. When the system gets triggered, either by fear of getting hit by a car or by being yelled at by your boss, your body responds in the same way. In fact, the stress problem that we see in modern life is due to the fact that our stress response has not had enough time to evolve to match a lifestyle where the stress response is activated multiple times a day. And in some cases, it just actually never shuts off. And this is why the statistics have it that stress is the root cause of approximately 90% of doctor's visits. Now, a famous endocrinologist named Hans Selye, who is commonly known as the father of stress due to the extensive amount of research he did in the field, once stated that it's not stress that kills us, it's our response to it. And what he meant by this was specifically the fact that we're not aware of how we're turning this system on, what it does to us while it's turned on, and most importantly, the steps we need to take in order to turn it off so that our body can go back to a healthy state of homeostasis without all those, you know, hormones and neurotransmitters running wild. Now, some years later, Albert Bandura, who is a social psychologist, also did extensive research around stress, but from a more cognitive point of view. His work led him to the conclusion that the stress response is triggered when we make a flash calculation that the situation that is arising in front of us goes beyond our abilities to handle it. And he added two important elements to stress research. I mean, he added more than that, but these are my two most important, to me, the most salient. The first is that there's a cognitive element to it. So the stress response is not entirely physiological. To trigger the response, something needs to happen. And what we think in that moment is ultimately what flips the switch. And the second point that I find the most interesting is that there's a self-evaluation involved. And it's a term, or one of the terms he coined is self-efficacy. And this is a sense of our own abilities. We ask ourselves, do I have the skills in hand to handle what is happening in front of me? And I'll give you an example. So if I told you tomorrow that you had to teach a class on how to color a coloring book, you might question the decision and you may feel one way or another about it in terms of liking the idea or not liking the idea, but chances are it's not going to cause you to stress out. You won't have that physiological reaction if I tell you that you have to do that. Because as adults, I'm assuming that many of us are comfortable with the idea of our coloring book skills. If, however, I told you that tomorrow you have to give a speech to the CEO of your company on what your team has been up to because the company's in a process of downsizing, I can guarantee that in that fraction of a second, your stress switch will flip on. Why? Because you're probably worried about the time you have available. Can you do a good job? You're worried about the consequences. Maybe you're worried about your presentation skills or that you haven't been performing your best in this period. And so what happens here is exactly what Bandura spoke about, that we perform a self-efficacy analysis. Do I have the skills to comfortably dominate what's in front of me? If the answer is yes, then I have no stress. And if the answer is no, then I stress. And as I was analyzing all these stress interventions that were rolled out in different workplaces around the world, each one cognitive in nature, but all with different techniques and approaches, there was one common element that produced lasting stress reduction, improved performance at work and in life, and that was that these interventions were all skill-based. And this didn't mean teaching only stress management techniques. Programs that taught conflict management, communication skills, organization skills, listening techniques, basically all of the quote-unquote soft skills that most companies require, but that many of us have never received proper training in. Those programs that taught these skills were the ones that had the strongest impact. And so I started mapping how stress interventions end up benefiting companies. And it was almost always through skill increase. And there's a domino effect. When employees were able to learn these skills and then had the chance to put them into practice, either in a group setting or on their own, even at home, if they were able to see improvement in how they managed situations, this inevitably caused an increase in their perception of their self-efficacy. And as their self-efficacy grew, so did their self-confidence, their ability to interact with their colleagues, their clients, and even their family. And it created a positive feedback loop where the more positive confirmation that they got that this new skill was useful in their life, and that they were getting better at it, the more they wanted to use it. And this led to an increase in professional performance, an increase in job satisfaction, and a willingness to go above and beyond for their company. It also kicked off another domino effect of increased attention towards improved life well-being. You know, when people learned these skills, maybe someone wanted to stop smoking or someone wanted to start running or eat better. The more they felt confident and in control of their situation at work and life in terms of communication or in terms of action, being able to bring home the things that they wanted to do successfully made them want to actually feel better on all levels. So the way to improved performance and job satisfaction is not a straight line, because there's a lot of programs that say, you know, teach your employees stress reduction techniques and they will perform better. And it's actually not a direct line. It is through the sense of self-efficacy, which comes from expanding their skill knowledge. So this is what we're going to do on season two. I've lined up the most incredible professionals, business owners, coaches, academics, and each one is going to share with us a different skill that they practice daily in their work life that they feel is ultimately fundamental for their overall well-being. They'll give us some tips on how to recognize situations in ourselves and in other people and what we can do about them. So hopefully, I'm hoping by the end of the season, we'll have a really nice, useful book of advice to provide with everybody. You know, sometime in 2023, we can get that out. And there's some skills you might expect to see, and there's some that you might never have thought of as crucial. So I'm so excited to be able to bring this to everyone, and I really, really hope that you'll join us in the many episodes to come and find it as useful and interesting to apply in your own life and also with your colleagues and in your workplace, as I did exploring the topic and getting to speak to all these amazing people. So thank you for listening, and I wish you a beautiful week full of good moods, and I'm going to say goodbye for now.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Moodily Matters. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort, and we'll catch you in the next episode of Moodily Matters.